Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, February 26th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello!
I'll just say up front, I'm still sick. Yeah, I was sick last week.
Yeah, you sounded like it.
I'm still sick. You know, the week has been up and down. I actually didn't go to work one day, but the rest of the week I went to work, and I probably shouldn't have. It probably got everybody else sick. But, you know, I don't know.
My wife has been sick, too. So, I don't know.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. So,
you know, I will mention one other thing. So, Yvonne, you'd mentioned on this show previously that you and your wife are expecting.
Yes, and it's going to be a boy.
And you announced on Facebook this last week, I guess, that it was going to be a boy.
Yes.
And I want to point out, though, that a lot of people were confused by your announcement. I don't know if you picked up on this.
No. Why?
A lot of people saw your It's a Boy post and thought the kid was born.
Oh!
And so I got at least one person who will remain anonymous who emailed me saying, you know, why are Yvonne and Juana posting all this other crap on Facebook but no pictures of their newborn boy?
Okay, you know what? It's a good point. Yeah.
So, when is your boy actually due?
August 6th.
August, okay.
August, yes, August.
You know, I vaguely remember June, but that's wrong. August.
Well, it's close enough. I mean, it's later in the year. Okay, yeah. So he's due in August, okay? You know, it's just, what happened? Look, so, well, I mean... Yeah,
reading the comments thread on your post, a lot of people were confused. Not just, you know, the one who talked to me.
Well.
Anyway.
Here's the one. You see, the one thing is, okay, maybe it's just me, but I have assumed that most people find out before he's born. Whether it's the sex of the baby.
Most people do these days.
So, I think that a birth announcement isn't so much announcement of the sex.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, so that's why I guess that I, you know.
All I'm saying, you confused people.
Well, I guess I could have been a little bit more clear, but.
Anyway, let's move on. I just thought you should know that people were confused.
Some people, anyway.
Some people.
Yeah, well, you know.
Anyway, so we have an agenda for today's show. We are, of course, going to talk about our wonderful, mystical Republican race, which is, you know, continuing on. Yvonne brought up the fact that HP and Dell both announced earnings and, lots of... reduction in PC sales, I guess.
That's the big thing, yeah.
We'll talk about that. And keeping in the PC theme, Windows 8 coming soon. Some thoughts on that. And finally, there's been a bit of a dust-up over really the last couple weeks, but we didn't talk about it last week, about Google and their privacy policies. They're unifying their privacy policies across the platform, but then also there was this issue found where they were circumventing preferences in Safari with regard to third-party cookies, blah, 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 blah. And so there's a bit of a dust-up about that, and we'll talk about that. So that's the agenda. So let's dive right into the Republicans. Dun-da-da-dum! So the first thing I will point people towards is I posted on my blog on Saturday, February 25th, on applesmay.com, a post basically gaming out a bunch of scenarios for Arizona and Michigan. And this was just to quantify a point I had made here on this show last week and maybe even before that. You know, people are all obsessing over Michigan and how Santorum might win Michigan, blah, 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 blah. But even if he does, and even if he does by a margin that's big enough so he gets almost all the delegates, he'll still lose the day because Romney's ahead in Arizona and that's winner take all. And, And so, you know, he'll still be falling further behind, even if he wins Michigan. And in order to actually be, you know, looking like a threat to Romney, he would have to actually win Arizona, too. And Arizona had for a little bit been looking like it was getting closer again, but then Santorum's momentum peaked and, you know, polls are moving in Romney's direction again in both Michigan and Arizona. And so, you know, it really looks like, you know, if Santorum wins anything, he's going to win Michigan and he's going to win it by a close margin, and quite possibly he'll lose both. And chances are, in terms of delegates, Romney will get everything from Arizona and they'll split Michigan. And what that means to the actual delegate account is Santorum falls further behind, Romney consolidates his lead. But, you know, the spin coming out of Michigan is going to depend on the popular vote in Michigan, not the delegate count. And if Santorum wins by even just a little tiny sliver, there, it's all going to be about how Romney's in trouble and Santorum has momentum and blah, blah, blah. What does this mean till Super Tuesday?
Well, you know, but I think that's going to be a moot point. I mean, I think you look at the polling numbers right now, the polls are shifting back into Romney's way, even in Michigan at this point.
I mean, Santorum has to, is falling behind again in Michigan, so he has to surge a little bit above where he is. But, you know, if he manages to pull that out, he's still going to get the sort of, the conversation is going to be about how he won and how Romney lost in his home state, even if it's not a tiny amount.
But I think we're
in agreement here. My point is that's bogus.
Yeah.
Like, he probably won't win at this point. Probably Romney's going to win both of these states. But even if Santorum did win Michigan,
he's still screwed anyway.
Romney still wins the night. And is cleaning up and getting closer to the nomination, and everybody else is getting further behind. Of course, the story at that point would be, you know, does, you know, like, okay, look, I'm going to talk about the Santorum wins Michigan case because it's the only case that is interesting in the slightest here. If Romney actually wins both, everybody's going to be talking about how it's just time for him to wrap it up. But if Santorum wins, then everybody's going to be talking about how it affects Super Tuesday. And that is a legitimate thing to talk about if, you know, it looks like Santorum actually gets some momentum going into Super Tuesday. Last polls have Santorum ahead in Ohio, which is on Super Tuesday. They have Gingrich still ahead in Georgia, which is on Super Tuesday. I haven't seen polling on a lot of the other Super Tuesday states, to be honest. It's fairly sparse right now, although I expect after we get past Michigan in Arizona, you'll see a whole bunch of Super Tuesday polling all at once.
Right.
But look, I still see nothing whatsoever in this race to indicate that anybody's actually going to catch up with Romney here. You know, Romney has to collapse. It's not just that Santorum or Gingrich have to do well. Romney has to collapse in order for anybody to catch him. Now, the other scenario of keeping him from getting to 1144 still, you know, on the table. He's right around 50% of the delegates. He's actually a little bit under right now, which means Romney has to do a little bit better than he's been doing so far in order to actually wrap it up and get to 1144. But he gets a series of good wins under his belt. The other guys start fading, and then that's easy. You know, the only way for that to keep Romney from getting there is Santorum, Gingrich, and Paul have to keep siphoning off a significant portion of delegates collectively. And, you know, how long can they do that? And I think we'll know a lot better after Super Tuesday. We'll essentially double, a little bit more than double, the number of delegates allocated so far Is that right? About double. Anyway, about double the number of delegates allocated so far after Super Tuesday. We'll still only have 35% of the way through all of the delegates at that point, but the picture will be clearer. If Romney's still hovering around 50% of the delegates, then these other guys have a shot at blocking him. If not, it's done. we'll see how it goes. I'm getting ahead of myself. But despite all the hype, I think Michigan and Arizona, unless there's a complete upset, you know, it's Romney's night, and he pulls further ahead.
Well, I mean, I think so too. I mean, Santorum, like on every other search that we've had, on every other thing, is fading fast. I was just looking at the numbers right now as you were going over this. And I mean, some of the latest polling is like, I saw there was like two Michigan polls that just came. Let me see. Two Michigan polls that just came out on Friday and showed Romney up by one by 3 points, one by 6 points. Okay, in Michigan. Okay.
Yeah. If you look at the Real Clear Politics average lines, it's not so much that Santorum is fading, really, as Romney's consolidated his lead a little bit. He's gone up, but bottom line, it's still really close. Right now, it's in the margin of error in Michigan. Michigan is neck and neck.
Right, it's close, but I think he'll pull it out. And Arizona, he's up by
one, a lot.
Poll that came out on Friday by 13 points. So that's not, I mean, that's not even close.
Yeah,
so
and the average has him up by 10, which is more than it even was, you know, yesterday when I looked
at it. Right, so that's why I'm like, you know, I think that this, I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of noise about it. And of course, there are upcoming contests that, I mean, you know, Romney keeps, like, just chugging along, but it's just, you know, he's going to have a lot of noise along the way because, let's face it, he's not going to win Georgia, for example, which we expect that. There's going to be a whole bunch of states where Paul and Gingrich and Santorum are going to pull some numbers out. But in the end, it's still the plurality is still going towards Romney.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, a plurality is not good enough. He needs to get a majority of the delegates.
But the point is that there is no way for the other people to really capture the nomination.
I think the pattern has been clear. You know, in order for any of the other three to be on a pace to catch up, they need to be getting, you know, more than 54, 55, 56% of the delegates in these races. They're not getting anywhere near close to that. Santorum, in order to wrap it up, needs to get slightly over 50%, and so far he's been getting slightly under 50%. He just needs to do a tiny bit better to wrap this up. Although, you know, right now, the pace he's been on has him wrapping it up at the last possible moment, which is not good for him. But, you know, the people who talk about momentum are absolutely right. All it takes is a few states in a row and everybody else disappears.
Right.
You know, essentially. So, like, you know, all it would take, Romney wins Arizona, Romney wins Michigan, Washington's weird. It's one of these multi-stage caucus things, and Santorum's actually in the lead in the one poll we've had in Washington. But, you know, then we get to Super Tuesday, and if Romney wins a majority of states on Super Tuesday,
it's game over.
Everybody's going to be like, okay, I guess we're done. You know, if Romney comes out very weak out of Super Tuesday, like winning some but losing some, and the delegate count is muddled, and he still isn't over 50% of the delegates, then people are going to be talking about the long slog and the fact that, you know, Romney will still probably win, but it may be a battle through a whole bunch more states.
What Romney needs to do to wrap this thing up, I think he needs to talk less and send out more ads. Because Eats just has this incredible ability of just saying the wrong thing at the wrong time.
And we were going to move into the funny things candidate said this week. I guess it's time to switch over to that, because, you know, basically, like, what Romney's big one today was what, the cars? Or this week?
Oh, yeah, the two Cadillacs, and the so he's got,
he was trying to point out that, you know, he drives American cars, so he listed three American cars that he drives and said his wife has two Cadillacs, too. And, you know, this is going to be the ultimate appeal to those blue-collar auto worker folks, you know?
Well, I mean, I will say this, okay? You know, I half expected him to have some utterly outrageously far more expensive cars.
Although, he might not have mentioned those.
Right. I mean, he listed his
American cars. He neglected to mention the Ferrari.
Right. I mean, he's got a couple of Cadillac SRXs. I mean, they are not really... I mean, I know they're Cadillacs, but they are not... I think that people are making it out a lot worse than it was.
Somebody also pointed out a flub where in one of the commercials where he's riding around in a... It is a GM car, but it's manufactured in Canada.
Well... But so are
the point is, if he's trying to emphasize his all-Americanness here, he's kind of not doing it well.
No.
But you're going to point out that he has Cadillacs, but they're not super expensive Cadillacs?
No, not really. I mean, a SRX starts at $35,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not out of reach of the average middle-class American to buy a $35,000 car. I mean, you know, I see quite a lot of people driving, like, I mean, I think that, what is the average, the median?
But here's the thing, too, it's not, people don't just look at the price, it's like the, you know, yeah, you, if he'd picked out a $35,000, family SUV kind of thing.
Right.
You know, it would have a different impression than a Cadillac. And the point also is, you know, he's a rich guy. People expect him to drive a fancy car. But it shoves it in your face when he mentions four of them or five of them, you know?
The average sticker price of a vehicle sold in the United States was $29,746. Okay? Mm-hmm. $30,000. So his car was a little bit above average, but... I wasn't like, look,
it's not about objectively measuring his statement and comparing it and saying, okay, given that the guy is like, is worth like $500,000, is it reasonable that he owns his four cars? You know, or are they in fact modest given what he could get?
It's about, you're not a billionaire. How many cars do you have in your house?
There are four cars in my driveway right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm sorry. It is not a typical of a family, you know, with a wife, children, a couple of, to have four cars. I didn't think it was an outrageous statement. I'm jumping even to Romney's defense, for God's sakes. I think I know. You know,
look, it's an impression issue. I completely agree with you that him having those set of cars is actually defensible. Given his situation, given even a situation a lot more modest than him. Right. But what you've got there is you've got, you know, a potential audience you're trying to woo, especially in Michigan, that it has been hit hard by economic times, maybe struggling to make payments on their one car, and then you're mentioning not just that he has a luxury car, but two luxury cars, plus all these other cars. It's just a reminder that the man is insanely wealthy, and you're not.
I got to tell you what the biggest problem he's got in Michigan. Forget about this. The biggest problem they've got is that, you know, let's face it, the Republicans are saying that the auto bailouts are like, you know, like...
Shouldn't have happened.
Right. That they were the worst thing ever done to America. And you know what? You're telling that in Michigan. It don't matter how fucking Republican you are over there, those people... are having none of this shit, okay? All right? They really aren't.
Well, and this is point out, if you look at polls of Michigan for the general election, yeah, this is a very blue state.
Totally.
You know, it's so you're looking at, you're looking at Republicans, but, you know.
Forget about it.
I shouldn't say very blue. It's solidly blue. It's not as blue as like New York or Massachusetts, but
right. But it's solidly blue, which is a state that before wasn't that solidly blue.
Yeah, right now in the polls, in that state, let me actually give you the real number. My 5-poll average of Michigan right now has as I scroll over. Obama up by 9.6%.
There you go.
Average is 49% Obama, Romney 39%.
Almost a double-digit lead. Okay?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, you know. So, that's what I'm thinking about that. I will say, look, Romney's car flub was minor. Okay?
Yes.
I mean, compared to
some of the other things he said, it's not that bad, but it was still amusing.
Exactly. Right. It was amusing. But compared to
he also earlier in the week, I believe it was this week, where he gave his little speech about how he liked the height of the trees and you know,
see that part. What did he say?
Okay, let me try to find the actual quote. Mitt Romney repeatedly references height of trees in Michigan. I'm reading from an article on democraticunderground.com. I just Googled Romney height of trees and a whole bunch of articles came up. This just happened to be one of the first ones. So Mitt Romney's last few Michigan stump speeches have included an unusual plank, his appreciation for the apparently perfect height of the state's trees. Okay. I love this state, he told an audience Tuesday. The trees are the right height. This feels good being back in Michigan. You know, he repeated later Friday. This feels good being back in Michigan. You know, the trees are the right height. He said things like this before, in November. The quote was, I love being in Michigan. Everything seems right here. You know, I come back to Michigan. The trees are the right height. The grass is the right color for this time of year. Kind of a brownish, greenish sort of thing.
What does the right height of a tree mean?
Okay.
What the hell does that mean?
I'll tell you exactly what he's trying to get at. He grew up in Michigan. He was a kid in Michigan. That's why sort of everything about the landscape, quote unquote, feels right. Because, you know, if you move between states... the trees and stuff are different. You know, the foliage is different. The way... Everything just feels a little bit different. Like, if you go from Michigan to Massachusetts to Florida, you can tell kind of which state you're in just by looking around.
Agreed. You know, okay.
And that's what he's referring to. He's just doing it in a way that sounds stupid.
Yes, it just sounds very weird. Okay, all right, I get that. Okay, so that was just, you know, yeah. Okay, so it's just not the most natural sound.
That article, I just have to say, there's one final quote at the end of the article. Romney's relationship to Michigan trees, however, wasn't always so cordial, according to his mother. As a teenager, he allegedly punched one. And then there's a whole article at the Atlantic Wire, Romney once punched tree.
I think I hit a tree with a bat once. I hit a tree with a car.
Let's see if I can do this. Hold on.
Like, what the hell? Think out of it.
This might not work. If not, I'll cut it out.
Are you trying to hit a tree with a bat?
I was born and raised here. I love this state. It seems right here. The trees are the right height. I like seeing the lakes. I love the lakes. There's something very special here. The Great Lakes, but also all the little inland lakes that dot the parts of Michigan. I love cars. I don't know. I mean, I grew up. If you showed me one square foot of almost any part of a car, I could tell you what brand it was, the model, and so forth. Now with all the Japanese cars, I'm not quite so good at it, but I still know the American cars pretty well. And drive a Mustang. I love cars. I love American cars. And long may they rule the world. Let me tell you, I want to do well.
Okay. Anyway.
He sounds like a dork. I mean, what the hell? For God's sake, somebody needs to tell him to just shut up and stop talking as much. Stick to the stump speech.
He loves everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, what about, but our buddy Santorum,
yes,
said a lot more.
Okay, controversial. Why don't you hit some of these?
Well, one of them was, let's see, that he's been bashing Obama for phony theology. Okay, apparently.
Yes, yes.
Which I'm not sure exactly what the hell the statement was. He criticized the prenatal amniocentesis test for women, saying that at least abortion too often. Wondered aloud why the federal government or even the state should be in control of schools. So those were three things that I've got here listed that he had said this week.
Well, and he mentioned that it was being a snob if you wanted more people to go to college, and that going to college was and that you know colleges were essentially a source of indoctrination to. Suck the religion out of people. I forget the exact words.
Right. You said some of those.
And to make people in the image of Obama. That's why Obama wants people to go to college.
Where the fuck did we, this guy, what planet did this motherfucker land from?
Meanwhile, people have pointed out that he actually supported various initiatives when he was a senator for Pennsylvania to expand access to higher education, etc.
Well, yes. I mean, but this is the point about this guy. I mean, this guy is just fucking like a lunatic. I mean, let's face it, man. I mean, he's just, you know. And, I mean, a lot of people have pointed out that a lot of the shit that now he rails against, he was for before. As well. Well, just like Romney anyway, but, you know, that's another story. But, you know, I mean,
Well, look, the thing with Santorum is he has single-handedly pulled this Republican race back away from... You know, things like the economy and other things to back to these social issues,
they're going to miserably lose.
Yeah, well, specifically, I was going to say social issues where the public at large nationwide has turned against the views that they're talking about,
like the whole contraception thing, for example.
Yeah, like we talked a little bit about the contraception thing last week, and you know abortion is still a controversial issue. Contraception is not. People are in favor of contraception. You know, so when you start going out there and saying contraception is bad, you're just completely off base.
People are in favor of going to college. People are in favor of fucking prenatal testing.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I don't know.
People are generally in favor of, you know, public school education.
Well, exactly.
You know, and these are areas where, you know, the general public opinion has long moved past the positions that are being put out here. Now, there are subtleties here where they're trying to make it, for instance, on the contraception battle, they're trying to make it really about religious freedom because it came up with regard to what Catholic hospitals could do and such. But the problem is, yes, there may be an argument there, but it's a difficult, convoluted argument. And if you just try to make it, you know, Obama's trying to beat down religion, there's a lot of counterindicators to that, where he's defended various religious liberty kinds of things. And at the same time, there's the whole hypocrisy of like, okay, would you feel any different if it was a Muslim hospital enforcing, separation of the genders and whatever else, you know, you might want to put in there that a more extreme Muslim hospital might do? Who knows? But, you know, the counter argument is so easy. It's like, okay, look, this isn't about religious freedom. This is about, you know, contraception and controlling when you have kids, which is something that not everybody, but the vast majority of the population of this country, you know, came around to that in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, and same thing with, you know, education. I think it's a generally accepted value that, you know, college is a good thing, you know, and, you know, yeah. Santorum saying, well, not everybody's made out for college. And, okay, maybe not everybody is. But that
I agree with that. I mean, I think...
Yeah, I agree with that, too. There are certainly some people that, you know, are not... you know, positioned in such a way that that would necessarily be the right choice for them.
But it doesn't mean that they don't need more education. I think one of the problems that we have in this country is that, for example, you go to a country like Germany, and Germany has either you go to university or you go to a technical school to learn a trade, for example. Right. So that's a problem that we have in this country. It's either college or nothing, okay?
Right, and Santorum did make that point that, you know, he would encourage his kids, for instance, to all get higher education, but it might not necessarily be college.
Okay, all right. So that's not totally off the reservation. But yeah, I mean, I do agree a little bit to that. I mean, I do think that there should be an alternative track for people who, you know, they don't, you know, maybe college isn't their thing. Maybe they should become a tradesman. Like, you become a plumber, you become an electrician, you become a mechanic, you become all these other skills that take significant skill and learning, but they are not necessarily going to be something that you learn in college.
But again, what he's doing here is he's being, you know, he's not making the subtle, he's not making the sort of principled argument about, you know, education is good, but we have to give people more options, blah, 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 or anything like that. He's saying things like, you know, Obama wants people to go to college because it's a big indoctrination mill that makes people less religious and more liberal.
I mean, let's face it. That is such a load of shit. Let's face it. Where did President Bush go to school? Harvard.
Yes.
Where did Obama go to school?
Harvard.
Okay. You know what, Santorum? Fuck off.
And I'll notice, Santorum also is college educated. He's a lawyer. He's got plenty of letters after his name. But you know, I will give him one thing. There is a point. You know, colleges in the United States overwhelmingly do have a somewhat liberal slant to them, and I do not disbelieve at all that you could find some polls that show that in many cases people come out of college more liberal than they went in. That might well be true.
I won't argue that.
Yeah, you know, I see the point he's making, but the problem is maybe
the difference is not to look at it that way. Maybe the difference is the fact that, you know what, when you go to college, you get exposed to so many different things that normally you don't see, that you broaden your horizons a little bit, Mr. Santorum.
That's very unconservative of you, Yvonne.
Fuck. Jesus Christ, really?
Okay, let's take a break. We've gone over half an hour on this segment, so let's take a break, and we'll be back after this with some stuff about tech.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back. Phew, that was a long segment there.
Okay. All right. So, where do we go next?
We got HP and Dell, we got Windows, and we've got Google, Safari, privacy, blah, blah, blah. Which one do you want to hit first?
Well, let's go into the HP and Dell thing with Windows, just a quick update.
Okay.
This week, HP and Dell both announced results this week. And just to give you a small little highlight over the air. Okay, this is from the this week's Economist. Hewlett Packard released another set of disappointing quarterly earnings. Overall, net profit fell by 44%, and almost all of HP's businesses recorded a drop in revenue, including a 15% drop in sales of PCs, and a 10% drop in servers and networking. Blah, blah, blah. So the other parts, but the biggest chunk was a PC sales drop. Dell also reported a significant drop in PC sales, also at about over a 10% clip. I mean, we keep talking about the effect that devices are having on PC sales, and I mean, it's becoming a freaking avalanche of PC sales crashing, like, right now.
Let's be honest here. You know, you say devices, but it's the iPad. I mean, all of these other devices are doing some, but...
It's the iPad, but I think also a lot of people, let's face it, postponing, replacing PCs and other stuff, because you know what? I bought a Samsung Galaxy phone, or I bought some other handheld device, and you know what? I spend a lot of my day doing this shit, so why do I need a new PC anyway?
Right.
You know?
Right, even with the phones.
Even with it, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it's just, I mean, it's quite, you know, shocking how, I mean, I think, I gotta say, I did not expect, okay, I knew that this was gonna happen, and we mentioned earlier, but the speed in which it is happening is just incredible. I mean, let's face it, I mean, Apple shipped, you know, actually outpaced, is the number one PC maker if you count in the iPads right now. Right. Period. I mean, they just vaulted past everybody in one fell swoop in less than 12 months. So I'm just like, I mean, the speed of it is just incredible. I think that's the one thing. I'm just wondering what these people are going to do now. That's one of the reasons we're talking about this whole Windows 8 release all of a sudden, where everybody's making a lot of noise about it.
Let me point folks to a chart that was actually last August, so it's out of date at this point. Okay. And maybe there's a more recent one, but it's with iPad included, Apple dominates the notebook market in Wired magazine. If you search for that title, you'll find it. It's from August 2011. But there's a chart right at the beginning, which is, you know, global notebook share, including the iPad by various manufacturers. And and you just see a huge spike at the end of this chart, you know, starting in Q2 2011, where all of a sudden iPad vaults to, or Apple vaults to the top of the list. Apple had been hanging around at like 6% of 5 or 6% of the notebook market globally, and it jumped to over 20%, essentially overnight. If you include the iPad, considering it as a notebook,
which I think you have to. I mean, you know, I mean, if you were considering netbooks in that category, then you definitely have to consider the iPad as well. I guess it's just, I mean, it's just the speed of it. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, But some of these transformations over time have happened, like, with amazing speed. I don't know if you're – in the early 90s, as the PC market started, like, surging and Microsoft Windows became more entrenched, I mean, I remember that, you know, how quickly all of a sudden IBM got itself into trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, it happened with breathtaking speed. I guess it's just, you know, all of a sudden happening just as quickly right now. With this, I mean, the fact that Dell and everybody has just all of a sudden just gotten themselves caught flat-footed right now. And I think that what it speaks, you know, and a worse thing is about HP is the stupid thing they did last year when they launched a tablet and then went and, like, fucking turned around and, like, stopped.
Oh, and then said they're getting out of PC business.
Right. I mean, they that was just such a massive, you know, strategic mistake on every front. I mean, it's the fastest growing market. It's what's driving business. You've just lost market share in like an incredible amount. And what you did is you actually launched a product in it and then you fucking pulled it out like 2 seconds later. I mean, it's just bonkers. I mean, I guess I was just surprised by the speed of the whole thing. I mean, I knew it was coming, but
we talked, you know, practically the day this thing came out, the iPad 1, how this was going to change everything. Because for a lot of people, this is all they need.
That's right.
You know, and we are by no means saying that it's what everybody needs. There are plenty of people who will still need a desktop. There are plenty of people who still need a laptop.
But there's a lot of people that don't need it.
There's a lot of people who don't need it. I mean,
that's right.
I mean, desktops are a dying breed. There's only, you know, there's a very small core group of people who really need or want desktops. And then you have laptops, and now with specifically with the iPad, nobody else has yet come up with something that's really, you know, a strong contender there. You know, that's all a lot of people need or want, and it gives you everything you need from email, web browsing, listening to music, video, music, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, there are a few competitors out there that are starting to get some traction on that front, but iPad is still way dominant.
So let's – Windows 8. Everybody's making a lot of buzz about it. Okay.
You know, I'll admit right here, I haven't paid any attention to Windows 8 whatsoever because I sort of am like, okay, yeah, whatever. Microsoft is going to do something else.
Well, but the one thing is, I guess...
Look, I have heard people saying good things about it, though.
There's been a lot of good things being said about it. I'm just wondering, well, a couple of people are actually... I think one of the things is that I think a lot of people are frustrated with Android on tablets. Okay, yes. All right, our mobile devices. They are... The chorus of people who are frustrated with it has been rising substantially, okay? And I think that they're trying to find another alternative, and that this may be it. I mean, you know, Windows 8. I mean, I guess that, I don't know. Have you actually tried one of those new Windows phones?
No.
Like, with the thing?
I have seen them. I have not tried them.
I've touched it a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I didn't use it enough to make a good judgment. But, I mean, look. The market for devices worldwide is so big that I think that if they come out with a fairly decently working operating system that can run on these devices, I mean, that there's plenty of market for them to be able to sell a whole bunch of these.
Oh, and I absolutely agree there. I mean, so far nobody's managed to make something that's really a compelling offering beside the iPad, but somebody could tomorrow.
Right.
There are trade-offs there. Like, there are a few that are really compelling given their price point. You know, given that they're like half the cost of an iPad or something. Oh, okay, that's pretty good for half the price of an iPad. You know, it's still not quite the same thing. So there's definitely, you know, plenty of room here for somebody to come in with something that's really, really compelling and compete against the iPad. It's just no one's quite there yet.
I just think the whole thing is just that a lot of the current, like, I think that the form factor and size that the iPad is, at that form factor and size, you know, the others aren't as good, or the prices are higher, or even things like that. You know, yes, there are a number of smaller devices that come out that are good, compelling price and have a lot of features, but I think that, you see, the problem is that they start, to me, they feel to me like more like niche devices, okay? All right? That's the thing. You know, yeah, I mean, if you buy a smaller device, honestly, the usability just is not as good. I mean, yes, can you use it? Yes. Is it cheaper? Yes. But do you wind up, like, when you go and, like, sit down with one or the other, are you, like, wishing that you had the bigger screen, like, a lot of the time? The answer is yes. And that's the problem, I think, at that device. I mean, but I'm not saying that there aren't a lot of people willing to make that trade-off. I think that there are. I mean, it's been shown. I mean, let's face it, Kindle Fire, the Nook Color, some of these. But, you know, the one thing that's still shocking to me is that the devices that are more, you know, that are best competitors to the iPad are not made by any computer maker at
yeah.
this point.
Yeah.
That's the bizarre.
That's thing. Very true.
Okay. I mean... And it shows how it just seems to me that all the freaking computer manufacturers are not – they haven't gotten it.
Well, they're still – I mean, you know, I compare them to the entertainment industry. They're both sort of knocked on their ass and don't – and see something completely change around them and just have no idea how to react.
That's exactly right.
It's like, I mean, the world is suddenly a completely different world and they're like, but this is how I've always done it.
But this one's got more, you know, more gigahertz, and you're like, nobody gives a shit about gigahertz anymore, man. That was like 15 years ago. Who cares? Oh, but it's the other one has 3 USB ports. I'm like, really? Who gives a shit? Nobody gives a shit. Okay? I mean, this is some of the arguments that I hear about this. Oh, well, but that one's got an SD card slot. Really? Who cares? When's the last time you took a chip and, like, pulled it out and put it into something? How often are you doing it every time? I mean, that's the shit that I'm like, just don't get it.
Hey, but it runs Flash.
Oh, it runs Flash. Yes, that's the other one, of course. I forgot about that one. That's another fucking thing nobody gives a crap about anymore. Shit. God. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. But I think that, you know, I just think that the turning point, you know, we talked about that turning point earlier, and I, you know, many times, and it's definitely here. It's already here. I mean, the impact is already, I mean, you know, this is going to be, right now, we hit the big inflection point in change of behavior of people using devices. I mean, we are definitely there, okay?
Yeah.
And the company, I mean, companies are going to have a very short amount of time to be able to respond. I mean, in order to be able to adjust to these changes, okay? Right. So that's what I see right now in the horizon, so.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's just... You're right. The change is here. A lot of people are having trouble reacting to it, but you know, this is why now Apple has $100 billion in cash or whatever they have now. You know, they're just riding this wave, and they're probably not done yet.
No, we're not done yet. So, all right. So we've got. I think the you know, unless you got anything to say else on that, I mean, we could take a break.
Let's take a break and do Google.
All right.
Although I still don't know very much about Windows 8.
It's a lot of people like it. That's what I can tell you. And apparently they say it's going to run on ARM and on that on. I'll give you the broad strokes. Number one, they are saying that it's going to be available on ARM. Okay, uh-huh. All right, and Intel. Okay, at the same time it launches. That all the device makers are making currently a number of tablets and other things and whatever, and that apparently it should be available before. I mean, it will be available for this year's holiday season.
There you go. And corporate IT departments will take 3 years to switch to it.
Five.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm still using Windows XP, so.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be back, and we'll talk a little bit about Google and privacy and that kind of fun stuff. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right. An opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now back to the show. And here we are. Okay, Google privacy. They changed their privacy policy, and basically everything's all connected.
But here's the thing. I mean, so every time I go into Google and they do a search lately, right? So I'll search anything. I don't know, jackhammers. Just jackhammers. Here we go. Okay, so I did a search on jackhammers. Beautiful. Actually, now it didn't come up. I kept getting this thing over here. Google has changed its driver policy. Google has changed its privacy policy.
Yeah, you probably at some point it may already be gone, but I think there was a dismiss button, and if you click that, it won't come back.
Oh, okay, I think I maybe finally did. Okay, yeah.
All right. I think so. I did too, because I'm looking for it, and it's not there.
That's not there. Okay, all right. So, but what is the big brouhaha over? Okay. I mean, I know that I saw that they unified the privacy policies that they had amongst the different things. Because I went in and read it. It basically told me, well, you know, we had all these inconsistent privacy policies, and we try to make it together into one unified policy. And I'm like thinking, okay, great.
Okay, here are the things here. And I talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago when you weren't on the show, in terms of kind of what people expect here. But look, the big deal of the privacy change is there used to be firewalls between certain ones of Google's services, where, for instance, what you did in YouTube wouldn't affect what you saw in Google Search or Gmail or other things. They've basically ripped down all those firewalls.
Okay.
So that now anything by Google, if you're in any property owned by Google, you should fully expect that everything you do there is known by every other part of Google too.
Okay.
That's the biggest change there. And what the real thing here is, what this has done, it's not so much any change. It's that people become more aware of just how much data Google has on you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And same thing, you know, Facebook, whatever else. It applies to these other guys too. But, you know, it's an awareness thing. It's not so much that Google is actually changing very much at all. It's just that people are suddenly waking up to the fact that, oh my God, Google knows everything.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, Google knows everything you search on. Google knows every video you watch on YouTube. You know, if you use Google for email, they know stuff about your mail too. You know, they know what you click on. They know what you don't click on. With Google Plus and these plus one buttons all over the place, they know where you're going on the web too.
What you like, what you don't like, what you...
Right. And one of the keys to the other issue with the cookie issue in Safari was it's not just that they know when you click that button. It's that if there is a site that has one of the Google Plus One buttons on it, even if you don't click it, Google knows you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's just a matter of awareness. And, you know, what I ranted about a couple weeks ago was basically, look, you know, what the hell do you expect? You know, Google's an advertising company. That's what they do.
That is how they make money. I mean, and the one thing about it is that, let's face it, I mean, I think that, look, say you do business with, a large corporation, GE, for example.
Yeah.
Okay? I think that if you do business with GE with any other, you know, say, I mean, and you think about somebody gathering information a lot about you, you're thinking, well, how would GE know a lot about you? Well, let's face it. GE sells appliances. GE is the largest provider of credit for stores around the world. Okay, so they could know your entire shopping patterns from all the cards that you carry, like, around. Plus, they would know what kind of, like, you know, appliances that you use and other things that you do. I mean, they could really harvest a lot of information across all of General Electric. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah. I'll admit, like, you know, I have ad block extensions on my browsers, and I just recently added another thing that specifically disables a lot of this third-party tracking stuff, because, yeah, I'm not a, you know, big fan of it. I'd rather not have that there, but, you know, I recognize at the same time that, you know, when you use these sites... That's part of the deal. I mean, there's the old phrase, and I referenced this 2 weeks ago too. If you're not paying for the service, then you're the product, not the customer. And for things like, you know, Google and advertising, you are most definitely the product. How Google makes money is selling your attention, you know, and putting things in front of you. And same with Facebook. So you've got to go in there with the expectation that, yeah, their job, what they do, what these companies do, their primary purpose of existing is to see, is to collect as much information as is humanly possible about you so that they can monetize it in various ways.
Right.
You know, whether it be selling the information directly or selling advertising or selling aggregate information, whatever, you know, their goal is to monetize information about you.
That's right.
And so if you use the service, that's part of the deal. You know, and if you don't like it, I don't know. Go hide in a cave.
I was, like, thinking about this for a second. I think you're right. For Google's own use, they could do. You know, what they have sometimes is like restrictions on whether they could sell it to somebody else.
Yeah.
But for their own use, you're right. I mean, they've got all this information. They know all your shopping patterns, all your this, all your that.
Although even there, let me say this. One of the very nature of privacy policies, and one of the reasons that every single privacy out there, privacy policy out there includes a clause, we can change this whenever we feel like it.
That's correct.
So just because it says today that they won't sell it to third parties doesn't mean they won't tomorrow.
Right.
Once you give up the, and this is part of what I ranted about 2 weeks ago too. Once you put the information out there, it is out there. Period. End of story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe you trust the site right now. Maybe they'll be do this or that. But you know, if you, and I was talking in context of like Facebook and embarrassing pictures and whatever stuff like that. Guess what? You took the picture electronically. You put it on the internet. It's out there. It's gone. You no longer have any choice in the matter. You know, you should consider it to be public. I don't care what your privacy settings say. I don't care what the site's privacy policies say. Once it's out there, it's out there. It's gone. You know, but certainly like with Google and stuff, you know, yes, the privacy policies have some restrictions. But in the end, once you've given them their information, they have your information. Done.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that you got to assume that when you're sharing that information in general, look, that's why you got to be careful with what you share, period. Okay? You know, look, I mean, anything you put out there, you got to assume that there will be a way to get to it at some
point. Right, and the thing is, people kind of think that way when they're putting a photo on Facebook. They're at least thinking, okay, only my friends can see this, and maybe there's some privacy settings to change around.
But well, I don't know if you saw a couple of emails flying around the last couple of days, but some people think apparently that you have the right to just fucking like include anybody you want in a fucking picture, and therefore, you know, if you go like decide to untag yourself for a picture, that you're a fucking like evil individual. I don't know if you saw that discussion.
I saw some of that, and I won't even go into my thoughts on that, but like I think in the end, like, The reality is Facebook actually gives you the tools to untag.
Right.
They could easily post that directly on the web with your name on it, and there is not a damn thing you can do.
That's absolutely right.
And you shouldn't expect that there could be.
Right.
You know, Facebook gives you that ability. But in general, if that picture exists, then guess what? It can be published. It can be published with your name on it. Sorry. Yeah. What I was going to say, though, is people at least are thinking those kinds of things generally about, you know, publishing things on Facebook, etc. For the most part, people aren't really fully cognizant of the fact that, say, for instance, every time they search, do a search on Google or Bing or wherever else, it's not like Google's the only one, then that fact that they did that search and then what they click on after having done that search is going into a big profile of them somewhere. You know, that information is stored and saved and collected and mined for, you know, are there things that we can do with this information that's useful? You know, both, okay, to help you on your future searches and make them more relevant to you, but also to sell appropriate advertising to you or for other things. You know, another thing came up this week about Target, the same kind of thing where, you know, Target was using information about who had bought what at their stores in order to, for instance, try to predict who was pregnant and therefore would get more baby stuff. You know, yeah, of course this is what they're doing. You know, am I super, super excited about it? No. And I'll, like I said, I'll put in these plugins to turn off some of this stuff. But at the same time, I acknowledge that that's reality. You know?
That's totally agree. It is reality.
You know, and I will say the one part before we wrap this up that Google did that they got in trouble for this week was Safari, both on the computer and also importantly on the mobile Safari version on iPads and iPhones, has a setting like most browsers do to say, do you want to allow all cookies? Do you want to allow no cookies? Or do you want to allow only first-party cookies? So basically what that means is if you're surfing on CNN.com, CNN can drop a cookie on your machine, but nobody else can.
Right.
And unlike every other browser out there, Safari's default setting, which means it's a setting that almost everybody has because almost nobody goes in and changes these things, is to reject third-party cookies. And so what that means is, for instance, you know, if you go to a site that has a Google ad on it, Google can't drop a cookie on your machine to track the fact that you've seen that ad. They can't track your presence through the Google Plus One buttons, etc. And so what Google did is they found a loophole and a sort of an HTML trick involving a form, if I remember right, where they could trick Safari into accepting the cookie anyway. And so that's what they got in trouble for, is actively doing something other...
Circumventing
the privacy setting in the browser. Now, a lot of people have, you know... Google got in a lot of hot water, but some people have defended Google for this, saying, you know, yeah, but how many people actually actively hit that setting? You know, this is not, you know, people actually choosing this. This is Apple choosing it. So therefore, this is, you know, completely fair for Google to go around it. Or
that's a load of shit.
Saying things like, well, you know, but this breaks the web if you have it this way, because, you know, this is how web advertising works.
So?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The point here is that the browser specifically says, you know, don't allow third-party cookies, and they did something specifically to get around that, and that's kind of scumballish. You know, now, it's an all's fair and love and war kind of thing, and the right answer is that Safari updates its browser to, you know, make it so that trick wouldn't work anymore. But really, regardless of whether, you know, it's just scummy. It's saying, you know, I know that there's a setting out here, but I'm going to do something to act as if that setting wasn't there. And I think you've seen this trend, you know, from Google in the last year. You know, the old-fashioned Google don't be evil thing, that's gone. They're all about evil now. You know, they're doing all kinds of things that you look at and are like, really? They're doing that?
Yeah, I know.
You know, I don't know if they've hit the point of backlash yet. I don't know if, you know, Bing is suddenly gaining a lot of users who are leaving Google because of this kind of stuff. But, you know, they're definitely pushing the envelope. They're now playing in the Facebook game, because Facebook has been known from this from the beginning, of constantly pushing the limits, going a little bit further than their users are comfortable with, and then backing off just a tad. But they're still further off than they were before. Then the users get used to it, and then they push it yet further another 6 months or a year down the road. And now Google's definitely playing that game too. And I know I've, I briefly tried, you know, going the Bing route for a while, just because I was annoyed by the new little black bar at the top of Google. I was annoyed by all the Google Plus stuff all over the place. You know, I was annoyed by a few other things. So I was like, oh, let me try someplace else. And I ended up back at Google in less than a week because it's still better. You know,
I mean, I've been actually occasionally using Bing. I haven't like switched, but I've been using it more than I used to. I gotta be honest. You know, and it's been getting better, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not like I haven't switched, I've been using it because I mean, every once in a while, but I don't know, but I'm still sticking with Google for now. We'll see.
Yeah. I think, you know, Google is trying to do what they need to do to continue growing and monetizing their business. But, you know, like Google, Facebook, all of these guys who are building their business off of this kind of data mining, definitely are walking a tightrope between getting the kind of information they need to effectively monetize everything on one front and pissing off the users that are fundamentally what they are. What they're selling is the users, and if the users start going somewhere else,
you know,
they lose out.
The problem is that even at this point, the number of people that are concerned or even discussing this
is small.
I mean, you and me are talking about this, but let's face it, 99% of the people out there
don't. Oh yeah, I mean, this is the kind of conversation that right now is only, you know, tech geeks talk about this kind of thing.
Tech geeks or legal, you know, or people who are concerned about privacy rights.
I'll tell you, it does go somewhat beyond that. Somewhat like when Facebook pushes too hard, you know, you get feedback from a whole lot of Facebook users who aren't in that demographic.
Agreed.
And now, of course, most of them get used to it after a week and then forget about it. But all it takes is something going viral about, oh my God, did you know that company X did this? And it's suddenly getting a lot of attention, and you could see an impact. But you're right. Right now, it's all under the radar. Like, there are a few people who care about this, who track it, who pay attention. But most people, you know, don't even think about it. And those that do sort of have a vague feeling, oh yeah, well, they're tracking stuff, but oh well. You know?
Yeah, it is what it is. Tough shit.
And frankly, I'm kind of there too. I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not like I'm giving up Google. It's not like I'm turning off, you know, everything on the web. I mean, I'm maybe using a few plugins to take away a few more things than the average person does, but I'm just, you know, whatever. You know, I recognize that this is how these companies do business. And when I do business with them, I'm choosing that trade-off is good for me, that whatever service they're providing to me is worth giving up the information I'm giving up for whatever they're going to do with it.
Well, I will say this, that am I concerned about this stuff? Yes. Do I do some things actively not to get some of this tracking stuff? Yes. Am I overly concerned about it?
No.
No, because, it's just right now, it's a side effect of doing business, unfortunately. It's the bottom line. I mean, if you're going to be using the technology,
honestly, it's going to get more so, not less so.
The other day, you know, I'm thinking about, you want to talk about tracking, fuck. I mean, one thing, it still drives you a little bit crazy is all these tracking services and whatever on my fucking phone, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, but the one thing is that I'm like, but shit, I mean, there's so much functionality that I derive out of those that if I turn them all off, I'm fucking giving up a lot too.
Right. And there's your trade-off.
Yeah. So, you know.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us. Yet another edition of Curmudgeon's Corner is done. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, anything else like that. In the meantime, have a good week. And tune in again next week to hear us talk about, well, we're probably going to be talking about Republicans in Michigan and Arizona. Oh, and I did want to give one additional fact I neglected to say. I mentioned that in Michigan in the general election, my 5-poll average has Obama up 9.6% over Romney in Michigan. But I will say that 5-poll average goes back to October. If you only look at polls taken in February, Obama's up 17%.
Jeez.
Wow. Anyway, that's it for the show. Thanks. Tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.